Hey everyone, welcome to the Next Level Sales Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Derek Jankowski. This is the only podcast that I know of for recently promoted sales leaders, and you're going to learn a shit ton today. So I've got my buddy Mike Hook on the line. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be here and happy to be joining you.
So, you know, I know you're head of sales at Childcare CRM, baby. But can you give our audience a bit of background on you? Like, how long you've been in sales? What was your path to where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I always like to kick it off and say, like, my sales career started when I was 18 years old selling Cutco door to door. You know, just yes. The old whatever knife selling club that people have been in. You've seen it all over. Some people. Selling not Cutco knives going door to door, right? But so I'm from that group, you know, growing up, really just banging down doors, hitting the phone books, getting there. And that was a job I did summer before college. Fast forward, got out of college and got into this company called Paley's Online Payments. And I started out in customer service. And one of the things they had in customer service there was a like upsell on payment processing fees. And there was a competition for it every month. And then I just started winning. Like I just stepped in, I was winning it. And I'm like, oh, we should probably move this guy into sales, which is where I always wanted to go anyway. So it kind of worked out well and, you know, moved into at the time what we called a sales associate. And then from there into a full-on sales rep, full-time. Mm-hmm. So that first little stint was only about 5 months. So from customer service to full-on sales was short. It was about a five-month time period.
Wow. Okay. Nice.
Yeah. And so... yeah. So from there, I spent roughly the next 5 or 6 years as an individual contributor. So moving from selling just our main product, then we acquired another company and moving over into selling the company and the product we acquired. So it went from online payments. We bought a utility billing and invoice management company that paired really nicely. And that was kind of my first taste at getting into leadership. So I was still an individual contributor. But, you know, we were really kind of a really small team that was blazing the way through that, trying to figure out how to sell it, what to do, and then bringing that to the larger company. So really leading through example and through success through there. And then after that was when I moved into several years after that, probably another 3 years. So right around 2018-ish, 2019 is when I moved into what we call it a sales overlay. So it was really like, subject matter expert leading the product sales over the eastern half of our company. And then did that for about 6 months, about mid 2019, got promoted and started leading what we called our sales specialist group. So all the sales engineers and all of our subject matter experts, like myself at the time in that role. And then, yeah, fast forward 2020, came on to Childcare CRM. Left San Diego, moved to Dallas, took over as the director of sales there. And recently, just at the end of last year, early this year, got promoted to vice president of sales.
Yeah. Congrats, man. That's so awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. So it's been an interesting journey, right? There's been a lot of acquisitions and different pieces and parts and, you know, being a leader as an individual contributor and kind of filling that role. All the way into being a leader over specialized groups before taking over, you know, really a whole sales team.
This is my favorite question that I ask everybody who comes on the show. And I know you know this is coming. What was the biggest mistake that you made after you became a leader of people?
Yeah. So hands down, the biggest mistake that I made was the assumption that everybody should sell and act exactly like I was, mm-hmm. and that would lead to their success.
Yeah.
Because I had been so successful doing things my way, the way that I did them, it just like didn't click to me that other people could be successful if they weren't like me. Those examples existed in the world. Like I was not unique. I was not special. There were other people out there who were just as successful as me. But stepping into leadership, it was like, okay, let's just make a bunch of clones. Let's make a bunch mm-hmm. of Mike clones. And I remember Oh God, it's just cringy even thinking about it. You just wish you could take things back, right? But I remember early on getting into this role, you know, there's 12 sales reps that I'm working with, and they're kind of spotty, right? Like they're popping in and out of meetings. It's kind of optional for them is what it feels like. And without thinking about what else was going on, without thinking about how much else they had in their days.
You mean company meetings, right? Not like sales meetings, not like with customers.
No. Yeah. So they're like missing meetings that I'm hosting. Yeah, okay. Exactly. For the team, like within the company, they're missing like my meetings.
Okay.
And I don't even pay attention or go look to find out why specifically, because it's like, you shouldn't be missing my meeting. My meeting is the one that's going to make you money. Like it was, it's the whole logic and mindset behind it was so off. But what it drove me to do was, as opposed to reaching out to people individually, I addressed the team as a whole. And I did it in an email too, which was even worse because I couldn't get a hold of everyone. Like I couldn't get them all there. So I shot an email to the team. And it was a lot of like, hey, look, you guys want to be successful. Here's what I did. You guys should be punctual and on time. And you guys have to be responsive and communicate. Like I'm laying out all these things that we know make good sellers and we know are good traits to have. But just the delivery of it was so off-putting, and it was so early on. It was like 3 weeks in or something like that, or a month in. I can't remember exactly, but it was really early, and it got received very poorly, as you would imagine.
I bet.
And of course, I'm doing it with the best intention. Like, it's not like I'm not mad that they're not showing up. I'm mad that they don't care as much as I do. And like, I'm trying to help them. And I'm trying to help them by making them little me's, which is never, I mean, it never works. You hear, and I think that's a lot of stories that, you know, you hear from first-time managers. It's like, I'm going to impose my, you know, philosophy and what made me successful on you. And it just, it backfired in a big way.
So I love this story because there's so much going on. But here's what I want to drill down on. I'm sure that showing up on time for internal meetings wasn't the only way you tried to make people be like you. Is that fair to say?
It was 100% fair to say. Like it was, the internal meetings was a sign of punctuality. Like if you're late for me, what are you doing on your sales calls? Like if you're not communicating to me, how are you communicating to our prospects and our buyers? And it was all of that, right? These little things where if you're not going to show up here now, how are you showing up everywhere else?
So somebody listening to this is thinking, I get you, Mike. I'm not going to make people show up in meetings on time, but I was the top rep, so I know how to sell the best, and everybody should have to sell like me. What would you say to that person?
I would say pump the brakes, right? Like right away. No, they don't. Because some of the best sellers that I know are really introverted. They're really pensive. They're really quiet, which if you put me side by side with them, are nothing alike. So I think when you talk about sellers and what makes good sellers, it's not, you got to move past these like traits, right? These external traits where you're extroverted or you're a talker, you know, you've got these crazy goals for yourself or you're super type A. That does not make a good seller. What makes a good seller, you know, we know, and we've talked about this and you and I have talked about this. It's someone who's curious, someone who can bring a buyer along, someone who cares. Yes, you have to be tenacious. Yes, you have to, you know, these competitive things are good when it's with yourself to be better, but it's never about being like me from how I act. It's about being like me or like other top sellers in how they care for the buyer. What questions are you asking, right? Like that's what you should be looking for. Not how they act to you, but what questions are they asking in discovery? Are they uncovering the right pain points? And if they're doing all these right things, fuck, they can be a hermit. Who cares? Because they're going to do good.
Right, right. Follow the process, but don't like read my script, more or less. Don't. Is that kind of what you're saying? Like have a process. do discovery.
Have there a process. A lot of
salespeople I feel like don't do discovery. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It is, but it's have a process, know the script, but your delivery is you. Your tone, that's you. You know, that's the one thing where you can't force those parts of you on other people. And in truth, it's not what makes great sellers. But if you have only experienced yourself being good in that regard, it's hard to understand that.
So what would you tell somebody who says, okay, Mike, I get you, but how do I know the difference between those things, between like a person should do it differently, and we're all going to lean towards, you know, I do it great, so do it like this, but like, how does a new manager determine which thing they should help somebody, should coach somebody up on, and how they know if they're crossing that line?
Yeah, so I think, and this goes back into something that I have since adopted and done, moving into new and even higher leadership roles. And it's something that I wish I would have been taught early on. And it's really just to go in slow and take the time to learn the team. Like if you get promoted from within your company, you might think you know the people who are now reporting into you and on your team. As soon as the relationship changes and your title changes, so does how you know them. Now you can still go get a beer after work. You can still go have fun with them. But that one-on-one that you're having now has a totally different tune. Like you're now responsible to help them grow, and they're now in part responsible for your income, right? Like that's a big shift. And if you're stepping into a brand new company, same thing, right? Like nobody knows who you are. So I think to answer your question, like to really get to know somebody and know what they're doing, like slow down, like take a step back and understand and listen to the team. Right? Like if you've moved into management, hopefully your new leader has talked you through what metrics matter to drive the business. And if you were a good seller yourself, you probably know and followed your own metrics. Those are good. Those should stay. So take some time to either behind the scenes first, or, you know, with your colleagues or the new employees first, to understand, what do you like? What do you wish you could change? What's causing you friction right now in our sales process? Where are you getting caught up? Right? Gather information first. Much like how we sell to our buyers and everyone says, oh, go slow. Spend a lot of time uncovering the pain. Figure out how you can help them get better. Really show them the way forward. You know, you want to do that internally. You're selling yourself now internally. And that's not being phony. It's about just understanding where everybody fits and understanding how you can actually help. And then from there, it's, yeah, go to those metrics, go to those early, you know, indicators that you know and say, okay, well, maybe I had a really good demo to close percentage, but I was horrible at discovery to demo. Well, okay, this is where we probably need to work. So let's maybe tailor our questions and ask a little bit about that, or vice versa. So I think in terms of understanding the team and understanding each individual, it's number one, take the time to talk to them and ask them, you know, ask them what they see, ask them what they're feeling, ask them how they've been doing, ask them where the friction lies, ask them where you can help early on, and then go into the factual stuff, right? Move away from the anecdotal stuff and say, okay, here's what I see. Now I've gained your trust a little bit. You know, I was a good seller because you've seen me do it. Now let's diagnose some of the stuff that I'm seeing here from you, and let's have a conversation about it, not an accusation about it.
This brings up a good question. How do you know when you've gained that level of trust with somebody? And specifically, just want to call it for our audience here. You took over an existing team. You're promoted to lead the team of people who are formerly your peers. And as you said, it's a totally different level of relationship. When that's the case, you have to regain people's trust all over again. How do you know when you've regained that trust?
So here's the thing. You don't, when you make a big mistake, like I did, sometimes you never regain that trust. And there were some people that I never did with. Sucked. It set me back like 6 months. It was a pain. You know, I think you realize you regain the trust with people when they start coming to you openly again, when they start asking you questions for help, you know, when they move out of their shell and they're willing to be, you know, a little bit vulnerable in a way. You say, hey, I don't know what to do here, or I need help. And they do it in a way that's not like quick answer in and out. You know, they initiate the conversation. They have that. They bring things to you. It has always been a sign of me when, A, you have trust, and if you lose it, when that trust is repaired, at least in a way that you can have a respectful working relationship and your opinion is validated.
Cool. I love that. All right. Here's a topic two topics I think are not covered enough. I'm going to bunch them together. What are some tips that you give on hiring? And what are some tips that you can give on firing? We talk about hiring a lot, like that's out there. We both know Amy Volez, who's amazing. She posts on hiring, but I'd like to hear your thoughts. But like nobody talks about firing. It feels like you're not allowed to talk about it. I have a lot of opinions, but I want to hear yours first.
Yeah, so I'm going to start with firing.
Cool.
Because it's a lot easier than hiring. And it's a lot more cut and dry. I look for a couple things. Number one, it's attitude, performance, and how you mesh with the team. So if you are doing the right work, if you have a great attitude, like if you're hitting all the things I need you to do, if you're participating in team meetings, if you're doing the right activities, if you're doing enough of those activities, if you're coming to me in our one-on-ones and you're actively trying to get better, if you're working hard and you're sitting there and you're just not cut out for sales, it happens, right? Not everyone's a seller. There's a good chance that we'll try to move you within the company, right? If you're like that good of a person, we might move you as opposed to firing you. Now we might also have to fire you too. But you better believe that every one-on-one we have every single week, you know where you stand against your target, you know my expectations for you, and you know what I need to see happen. Now, if you're not hitting your attainment and you're not doing the right work and you're not showing up the right way and for lack of a better word, if you're just not coming here ready to do the job and your performance is suffering, again, you know that. You've seen it from me, and I have told you my expectations, and you know what those expectations are. We've outlined, like, not that I build this culture of fear, like, oh, if I don't hit my number, I'm going to get fired. It's like, no, if you don't do the right work and don't hit your number, we're going to have conversations about it. And if those conversations don't spur you to change something in your activity, if you're not working to get better, then we're going to have that conversation. And at that point, like if I don't see you making the improvement, and I know there's a lot of yes and no's about pips out there, like some people love them, some people hate them, I will put somebody on a pip, right? And the pip is always about things that they can control. Because again, I believe that if somebody comes in ready to work and somebody's going to have a good attitude and they're going to do the right stuff, you know, you never know what's going on in someone's life. Hopefully you do. Hopefully they've opened up. Some people have to me, some people haven't. But it's very methodical in that regard. It's like, you don't do the work. You don't hit the targets. You're not coming to help. I'm going to throw you on a pit. You already know where you stand, but now it's formal. Like now the timer has really started. So show me how much this job means to you. Show me how much you want to be here. Don't just tell me about it. And again, it's all things that are attainable, right? It's things like, are you doing the right work? Are you showing up to the right activity? You know, are you coming ready to go? The thing I will say about this though, and this is where I think a lot of people dislike pips, is because the manager doesn't go the distance to help the rep. They've already given up. So when I do my pips and I draft that together, I'm putting together a really structured, regimented coaching plan that's way more than I already have. It's like 2 to 3 times as detailed because it goes through every little lever because everything needs to be changed, right? It's a whole mindset change at that point. So I'm coming in to do the work too. And it'll be all the way from things like we need to double our one-on-one time, right? Like maybe now we're meeting twice a week as opposed to once a week. Maybe, you know, I'm expecting you to do things after hours to help me help you, right? I need you to send me your call snippets and I need you to send me your notes on it. You know, now your preparedness means that much more so that I can help that much more too. Like you have to show me that extra effort. But if you do, I'm 100% on it. If you don't, well, the writing's on the wall, right? It's there. You got to cut ties. It's out. And it always sucks to fire like that. But I think, you know, again, we meet in our one-on-ones every week. We have weekly team meetings. We've got stand-ups 3 times a week. Everybody knows what I expect from them. So anytime I've had to fire somebody, it really hasn't been a surprise.
I think that's how you know you're doing it right. They walk in, you know, you meet, they know what's up, they know why. Yeah. Whether they like it or not, it's a different story, but.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that for me is, it's why firing's easy, right? The writing's on the wall. The expectations are there. You can't hide from the numbers in sales and you cannot hide from effort and attitude. Now, the one thing I will say that is difficult, but more important than anything else you can do is if you've got a high achiever with a toxic attitude.
Okay.
And those people have no place in my organization at all. If you are either trying to pull some type of ego move or there's bad talk or backhanded comments, if you're not coming to be a part of this team, and that's not like, oh, you've got to be all chummy and you've got to be talkative. I'm not talking about that. Like if you're not participating to help bring a certain level of at least energy and confidence into the group, like if you're sitting there pouting or poo-pooing, you know, we live in a virtual world now, right? So if you're showing up with your camera off, if you're being defiant, if you know, you're talking bad on other departments, if you know, if you just do not fit the bill, if your attitude is not there, again, this is where we will have warnings. We will have conversations. It will be addressed. But my tolerance for that is shorter than anything else. And at that point, you have to move on because that's not just toxic for the team. That's toxic for the company. And no amount of quota is worth that environment.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I mean, that's worth, that person always ends up being a bigger headache than they're worth. Quick story, because I want to hear if you've had this kind of experience too. This person wasn't on my team, but they came in every day or nearly every day late. Obviously, we're out drinking late the night before, still smelled like alcohol, like bad attitude on the team. They got fired and the overall productivity of the entire team went up. Everybody on that team knew that that person was toxic and was impacting what was happening. What do you think about that? Have you had this from our experience or?
So I have had experiences that are similar, but not quite as drastic.
Okay.
So we definitely have seen things like team morale go up, but as far as like productivity skyrocketing, you know, I don't want to say like we caught it ahead of time. So it wasn't that big of an impact. Like we're not that good, right? Nobody's that good, but the morale was the biggest thing. And it freed us up to help elevate. And the other thing too is, you know, if you let high achievers have a bad attitude, what you're saying is that I don't actually care about the culture and the team I'm building here. I only care about the output. And I think that's a lot of the reason why you hear these stories, much like what you experienced, that when you get rid of someone who's really toxic, the team does better because all of a sudden it's like, man, this guy really cares about me. I want to make sure that I work here because I want to stay here and I want to work for a leader like that. And I want to be a part of a company that, even though it's a tough choice, stands up for what they believe in and does it the right way.
Yeah, for sure. I'd agree with all that. Like what attrition is an overlooked, you know, your reps are going to quit if you let those toxic people hang out. And I feel like that is too rarely taken into consideration when thinking about firing somebody. It's, well, they deliver this. Okay. Keep waiting and people are going to quit. And then you just got to backfill them. And
yeah. It's hard too, right? Like you're sitting here you're at a company, you've got your revenue targets. They're always big goals. So to say this monthly number is not worth it anymore, it is a big deal. But I think that's also why it goes such a long way.
Yeah.
Firing. It's very cut and dry. It's not very, it's difficult, but the logic behind it is not very difficult. And people have already shown their colors, right? Like they're in seat, they've shown their colors. Like for that reason, and the fact that that's really hard to find out is why hiring can be so difficult. So, you mentioned we both know Amy, so I've got a pretty strict hiring process that I go through. So we've got our test, we've got our scorecard, and we've got our criteria. So our interview process itself is quick, but the steps in it are very rigid. So when someone applies for, a role with childcare CRM, and when they've done it in past companies that I've worked for, what we look for is there's a sales test and an aptitude test. It's run by a company called Criteria, called the CCAT. So you take that and you have to pass it. And then there's like a little sales AP thing where you take that test and we want to see how you do on that too. So we need you to hit a certain score on the test. We need you to hit a certain score on the sales AP. Generally, people do pretty. So the CCAT is just like an IQ aptitude test. It's got all those weird questions on it. It's a time test. It's not very difficult, but it's more nerve-wracking. Sales AP, a lot of the same. It's just a generic sales test, like testing for the qualities and traits of a seller. And you kind of set that up ahead of time a little bit with the test too. So it's doing things like, what's your teamwork? Are you competitive? Are you open-minded? Are you curious, right? So it helps generate, filter out those qualities in a test. None of this is foolproof, but I like it for two reasons. Number one, it shows me how serious you are about this job. Like if you are not willing to take this little thing to come in and interview with me, then what are you going to do when you get here?
Right.
Like that's the next part about that is the answers to their questions in the test, how they come back paired with their resume, their LinkedIn profile, any other socials that I can find will help me craft the questions that I want to know and help me drill towards the traits that I want to know. So, we talked about curiosity. I want to know someone's curious. Why? Well, because I want to know if they're going to ask good questions and care about what the buyers are saying. So I want to start asking people about the hobbies they have, the things that they're doing, what they pick up. I want to ask them about, what they think about certain topics that they might not know about. If someone's, played, let's just say someone's played football their whole life. Let's start asking them about reading books or something different. What are you into? What are your hobbies, right? Try to do something different. Maybe it throws them off, but either way, I'm starting to figure out what type of person this is. Like, are you well-rounded? I always like to ask people too, to tell, I think one of the easiest questions for me that can help uncover that too is tell me about your sales process, right? If it's a seller who sold before, and when we start asking about how they've done things like discovery, I'll always ask them, what type of questions did you used to ask? How would you handle that? Try to figure out how their mind works. Not foolproof. There's a whole lot of different things, right, that I'll go through. I'll save you the whole list of questions we'll go through, but curiosity, a big one. Tenacity and mindset. I want to know, what's your ability to go? What drives you? How are you being motivated? I think my favorite question that I ask in an interview, well, there's two really, my two favorite questions. The first one is, tell me about the toughest day you had on the job. I want to know about somebody's worst day. And then the follow-up question to that is, well, what'd you do the next 24 to 48 hours afterwards? Because I want to see, how did they rebound? What was the outcome?
Yeah.
So that'll tell me, what's your mindset like? Are you willing to, in a job where we get beat up as sellers, take your beating, come back and do it again? And the follow-up to that question too is always, or not necessarily a follow-up to that question, but I'll ask it later in the interview, is tell me what your dream job would be. And that in of itself will tell me a lot. Does this person want to do a job that talks to people? Do they want to do a job that's more back? Like, you'd be surprised. People apply for sales jobs just because there's so many of them, right? They're not always the right person to be in a sales role because those jobs are out there and they know that you can make lucrative money from it. So I want to know, you know, what's your dream job? What do you want to do? Like, what's going to fulfill you also, right? Like, what type of things in your day-to-day will be fulfilling to you, right? And that will help me uncover and identify, how's this person going to fit in? Where are we going to do the right thing? You know, obviously you want someone who's competitive. Now, for me, I'm super competitive with everyone and everything. I don't care if you're not competitive with other people, but you better be competitive with yourself. Like, I need someone who wants self-improvement. It's why I love people with hobbies and I love people who do outside things, because it shows me they're well-rounded. It shows me they can develop other groups. It shows me that they can go. And especially with something like an instrument, you know, it shows me, hey, this person's willing to practice and put in the work and get better and better and better because they care. So if they care about this job, I know they'll work to get better at it. And, you know, I run through this list, right? I just kind of gave a lot, and, you know, I'm sure we could spend a whole hour on this. People do all the time, but I layer out these traits and my questions and how they answer these questions. I will weigh them against these questions and really how they answer, how I feel they answer. We'll, of course, do like some mock pitches, some mock presentations, get that in there. I want to hear how they pitch their old company because they don't know about mine. So I want to give them something they know so that they're at least comfortable. And then I'll give them a little coaching here and there on something, have them repitch me, see how they can tweak things. Even if I'm totally off on the coaching, I just want to see how they take the feedback
right
in the moment. It's less about being right or wrong. It's more about how they respond to that action. And then what we do is I'll put them on the scorecard. Prior to meeting with me, they meet with HR for like a similar like cultural feel out, asking questions, diving in that. So HR will rank them. And then the final meeting's with the CEO.
Okay.
And so the CEO kind of does the rundown. So we all sit together, we have our scorecards out, we grade them, we figure out where they fall, pass, fail, job offer or not. And, you know, if there's multiple people up for the same role and there's one spot, then, you know, we'll take the best candidate and we come together and make that decision. So, you know, without, again, taking up the whole time, we fill out the steps very detailed, but the process itself is very rigid, right? So it's like test, HR, me, CEO, that's it. Like, there are no extra interviews, there are no extra steps. We right, found it
exactly, you know, that's what it takes.
And the other thing with that too is it's different, right? Like, if you're building out an outbound team and you're building out net new business, new logo hunters, the character traits you need are different than getting someone who's an account manager or a farmer or an upsell cross-sell rep. So it's really important to understand who you're hiring for and what you're hiring for. Same thing with the stage of company, right? If you're at a small startup company, I'm going to need someone who's probably a little bit more of a jack of all trades. Right. You're going to have more skills or at least a higher probability and a higher potential to develop those skills quickly versus, you know, you sit at a company like my last company, you get over that $100 million mark, you get to unicorn status. Well, the training programs, the process, the onboarding, the scheduling, everything's so structured, so rigid. You have one singular focus and it is to sell X into this segment for this dollar amount, and I'm going to tell you how to do that to this exact buyer. Like, it's so sophisticated, that person's like, let's just go plug and play. Not, and there's nothing wrong, right or wrong, with the other ones. It's just knowing what you have to hire for too. I guess that would really be the first step.
Cool, that was excellent, man. Really, really detailed. I appreciate that. Last question for you. I know we're coming up on time. What's your superpower? I guess second to last question, but what's your superpower?
So this one's always been hard for me. Like, answering these type of questions have always been hard. I think the one thing that I can do exceptionally well is communicate a vision, understand where I want to go, why we need to go there, how we're going to do it, and say it in a way that can be understood by a large group of people. And then have that group of people buy in to said message, at least in the moment.
So what's like the Mike Hook abbreviated masterclass and how to do that? What would you tell our audience? Here's, so, you know, X steps to do that.
Start big and narrow it down. So I actually posted today on LinkedIn and Twitter something about strategic thinking and how it can help de-stress you and how it can help provide clarity in a moment, right? So if you've got a problem, how are you thinking strategically about it? Well, it's the same thing if you're about to present a message to someone. So I like to take a lot of time to actually write down what we're doing, right? I talk out loud to myself all the time to get things out of my head. That then makes it down on the pen and paper. And I make sure that my message and understanding where I want to go is really clear. So any sales leader out there, there's going to be a time where you're changing a comp plan. Okay, it's a great example, right? You're going to go change a comp plan for something. So you've got these company goals now, right? These big company goals. You've got your bookings goals, your churn goals, your EBITDA, your NRR goals, your ENPS, you know, these general company metrics, your cross-sell, right? And then those bundle down into, well, how are we going to hit these goals? Okay, well, we've got cross-sell and net new and, you know, our retention numbers. So it's start really big. Right? Where are we going? And most importantly, why are we going there? Like, here's our target, but why am I going to this place? What does it mean? And not only what does it mean to me, but what does it mean to every single person here? Right? So you're going to take this really big, big idea. You're going to write it down till it's crystal clear. And when you think you're clear, like for me too, I'll have other people read my stuff who are unrelated at times. Now, hey, does this make sense to you? Because if it does to somebody who's not related to what I'm doing, it'll make sense. A lot of my people are revenue people, right? So I'll go to other departments too. You know, hey, does this sound right? Even from a sales standpoint, you know, you're at the same company, but from the other department, does it sound right? So get really clear and then make sure you're clear. Because then what you can do is when you come to talk to everybody else, when you're talking about the vision, where you're going, why you're going there, and then how we're going to do it and how we're going to do it together. Why you're so important to this vision or this goal and why we cannot do it without you. So it's not just about, hey, we're going to go sell $25 million in new bookings this year, right? Because great, your seller, your SDR doesn't care about that, but we're going to go sell $25 million this year to make sure that we're helping every childcare owner and director in the industry stay in business so they can help the children and those parents get back to work so that they can come out here and feel confident in what they're doing every single day. And it's going to help these children develop because that's what we do. We're a part of the community here. And here's your part in that. Yes, we are selling. Yes, we're going out to everybody. But what we're doing is you are helping them make a difference. And you're doing that by a CRM. And here's what that means. And yes, you're going to get paid X amount of dollars. And yes, we're going to talk about why. But here's how I'm going to help you do that too. Here's our distribution and lead channels. Here's our meeting cadence. Here's what's going to happen. So there's no ambiguity, you know, so it really is cascading down and coming out and providing the whole picture with full transparency. And to be quite honest with you, it's not always pretty. The example right here is a great one, right? It's an uplifting one, but you know, 2020, there were a lot of difficult conversations too. And I think being able to communicate in those difficult moments, much like firing that toxic employee, right? Like you have to be super tight. You have to be super dialed in. And look, there's no other way to say it than you don't want to hide anything too, especially in those bad moments.
Thanks for sharing all that, man. That's such good shit. I know we're at time. Want to thank you for coming on the show, man. There's a lot of good shit that came out here. I think everybody should go back and listen to this again and take notes. Like it was that good. So I really appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll probably like the Next Level Private Mastermind. It's a small group of newish sales leaders who are helping each other grow faster and become better. Each week, we cover a specific topic and troubleshoot actual issues new leaders run into. The link is in the show notes or go to derekjankowski.com/mastermind. Thanks.